This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Richtig spannend, richtig vielfältig. Das ist deine Karriere bei Kaufland. Ob Trainee-Programm, Direkteinstieg, Studentenjob oder Praktikum. Finde bei uns den Einstieg, der zu dir passt. Profitiere von einer attraktiven Vergütung, spannenden Aufgaben und individuellen Entwicklungsmöglichkeiten. Werde jetzt Teil unseres Teams. Bewirb dich jetzt unter kaufland.de/studenten. Kaufland, hier bin ich richtig.
Hello, I'm Audrey Brown, and today in Focus on Africa, the online shopping platform Temu is taking Nigeria by storm. What do local users make of it?
I ordered some gym wear, gym bag, glasses. I would say it is what I ordered and it is what I got in terms of money.
The phone stand I ordered, I saw that, well, I would probably in the end wasn't the one who looked at it clearly. It was the phone hook and the stand that were there, and I thought it was everything I was going to get. Apparently, it was just the hook.
That sounds like a mixed review, but we'll also be discussing the impact on local platforms. And we'll meet a Kenyan woman who survived death row in Malaysia.
Sometime I was thinking that I was going to be hung in Malaysia because I have even friend which they hung in Malaysia.
What was it like in that place?
It's so terrible. They chain my hand, they chain my leg, and that chain surround your stomach and is so heavy. Until today, I can't even carry a jug of water.
It's Thursday, the 16th of January. First, we go to Mozambique. It's President Daniel Chapo's first day at work. His path to power has been difficult. He was the winning candidate in a violently disputed election held in October last year. The opposition, under the leadership of Venancio Mondlane, called for demonstrations. People responded in huge numbers across the country. Since then, around 300 people are said to have been killed in clashes with police over the outcome of the poll. The dispute was taken to the Constitutional Court, which upheld the result, bringing us to the swearing-in of Daniel Chapo yesterday.
Daniel Francisco Chapo, investido no cargo de presidente da República de Moçambique.
He took up the oath of office with the following words.
República de Moçambique.
I, Daniel Francisco Chapo, swear on my honour to respect and enforce the Constitution, to fulfil faithfully the office of the President of the Republic of Mozambique, to devote all my energies to the defence, promotion and consolidation of national unity, human rights, democracy and the well-being of the Mozambican people, and to do justice to all citizens.
But even as he said those words, yet more protests were being held, and at least 8 people are reported to have been killed. The main substance of these protests go beyond the fact that the ruling party, Frelimo, which had been in power since independence from the Portuguese in 1975, has once again won the election. The country has battled an Islamist insurgency in the north and economic challenges that has impoverished, frustrated and angered the population. So what's next for Mozambique? Can the new president deliver on the things the Mozambicans need to flourish? Adriano Nuvunga has been sharing his insights. He is director of the Center for Democracy and Human Rights in Maputo.
Though Daniel Chapo was inaugurated, that is more like an event, which in itself, it was surrounded in a highly militarized, no people attending it, and people being targeted outside to show that there is no people behind the inauguration. Now, it has happened. Mondlane is calling for more protests. And these protests, they are substantiated by a highly polarized, highly divided and significant segment of the population that does not see reflected in Daniel Chapo's victory and seem to be ready to support whichever Venancio Mondlane direct them to go. So it will more depend on what Chapo will do. Will he look at himself as a leader of the status quo, business as usual, or Frelimo, believing that they retain power through fraudulent election and then they use violence? Or he says it is a new dawn, an opportunity for him to reach out to Mondlane for dialogue, inclusive dialogue on key policy issues and fighting what are the key priorities for the country. That can be the change.
Well, Daniel Francisco Chapo says in his swearing in that he will devote his energies to the defense, promotion, and consolidation of national unity, human rights, democracy, and the well-being of the Mozambican people, and to do justice to all citizens. What do you take from there?
Daniel Chapo is not new to governance. He was a governor, and not much has happened. Of course, people have an opportunity. Now he's the president. He has an opportunity ahead of him to do great things different and to start a new beginning. But it is not about the person. It's about the machinery. It's about the party that sees itself as the state. So Frelimo think it is the state. They control everything. Someone like Chapo, who is young, is new, those old guards that control the machinery of the state, of the party, they think they will control him. Will he be able to rebel against those and start a new way of doing things? We have to wait to see. But the problem is the country is facing not only its biggest political and post-election crisis, but also a biggest economic, social, financial debt. So there is no money to do things. So he's really to climb an Herculean mission. He has a big mountain to climb.
What was Venancio Mondlane's response? Because they're both younger men, you know, the next generation of political leadership in Mozambique. And the people that certainly follow Venancio Mondlane are very young. They see him as a great hope to try and change things in Mozambique. Perhaps Chapo reaching out to him, do you think that that was a genuine outreach? And how would Mondlane respond to that?
Mondlane, when he arrived back from exile, he expressed readiness to engage in a political dialogue. I hear that he also joined a meeting on Monday to talk with the other opposition leaders. So it seems that there is room for politics. There is room for governance here. Again, it will depend on how Frelimo is genuinely ready for dialogue. For 50 years, Frelimo was never ready for genuine, constructive, inclusive dialogue. It was always about manipulation, always about marginalization, always utilizing the state military forces to target human rights defenders, to target democracy defenders, to target opposition defenders. It is not about Chapo. It's about this former liberation movement turned into government, which is Frelimo, that they believe to own the political economy of the country, to own the people and the state. Hence, against the will of the people, they went on to undertake this inauguration. So it's a lot that Chapo would need to do to break from the chains of Frelimo.
What would Mondlane accept as concessions?
Reading what Mondlane is saying, I think he's not more on negotiations for him. It's about governance. It's about key policies. And more importantly, it's about ending this Frelimo state, in the sense that Frelimo to equate itself with the state. So to make a clear distinction between the state and political parties, so that the institutions of electoral governance, the institutions of the police and of justice, they can operate as a normal institution upholding what the constitution says and key legislation in the country. That's what Mondlane is heading towards. But for what we have seen in the past, we don't see Frelimo to short its own legs, because dismantling the party structures in the state, that would also mean ending the Frelimo regime.
And that's not going to happen anytime soon, you're saying?
Absolutely, because regardless of what Mondlane does and what Chapo does, the people, the young people, for the first time, they're in the streets. They are the Facebookers. They are the WhatsAppers. They are the Instagrams. They are in the streets. They will not go back to their homes if the things are not changing.
So let's look at Mozambique from now on till June. What do you see happening?
There is a first. We have President Nyusi, who has ended his term. People are celebrating that. This is the man that has destroyed the democratic infrastructure of the country. How many human rights defenders have been killed? How many people have lost their lives only for believing that they can go to the street to peacefully demonstrate for a better country? That is the legacy of President Nyusi that, unfortunately, we will still see it playing out in the coming month. So though he has ended his term in office, but his legacy will still be there. The death squads will still be there. So people have to be still watchful that they can still be targeted. Now, with all this happening, we will also start to see Daniel Chapo, who will say he is not the old guy. He wants to do things differently, and he will start to implement some of his ideas. Number one, to reduce the size of government. That's something positive. Also, in terms of public procurement, but also reducing the state at the provincial level. If he does this, he can eventually start to gain respect as a leader. So Mozambique has an opportunity here, and this new generation of Venancio Mondlane, of Chapo, they can take the country forward in a spirit of dialogue, in a spirit of openness and mutual respect. We are hopeful, but Frelimo is an institution and old habits never die.
That was Adriano Nuvunga, director of the Center for Democracy and Human Rights in Maputo. Many of us are getting used to shopping online, and there are local and international platforms to cater for that shift in our habits. Some might say they are feeding the habit itself with pop-ups and ads on our socials. The China-based giant Temu is everywhere, and in Nigeria, it very quickly became the most downloaded app after being launched recently. The model is low-cost, fast delivery to your door, and you can pay in local currency. Those who use it have been sharing their experiences.
They came in with some sort of aggressive marketing. It was almost impossible for you to ignore them.
For me, it was quite interesting, and I felt, hey, there's a new kid on the block playing in this same market.
When I first saw it, I was skeptical, and I tried, and it really blew my mind away.
When I was eventually ready to make a purchase on the app, for some reason, it wasn't accepting my credit card, so I deleted the app.
I ordered some gym wears, gym bag, glasses. I would say it is what I ordered and it is what I got in terms of money.
The phone stand I ordered, I saw that, well, I would probably in the end wasn't the one who looked at it clearly. It was the phone hook and the stand that were there, and I thought it was everything I was going to get. Apparently, it was just the hook.
It's a basic Nigerian problem not to read. So when you don't read and understand what you're buying, you have issues. It's something that happens even in the Nigerian market.
They allow you shop in local currency. That used to be a challenge back then with certain other shopping, online shopping platforms.
Because they are delivering, so you just keep buying and just keep enjoying the experience. So
there are certain things that you don't want to get from Temu. I've come to realize that I'm not going to buy clothing from Temu. I may not buy shoes from Temu either. If I will buy anything, it will most likely be appliances.
I don't buy so much stuff online. I would rather go, to the traditional market to see for myself what I'm buying real time.
1 to 5, 1 being the least, 5 being the highest. I will give them a 3.5. You can be dreaming and you see Temu in your dream.
The thing is, local platforms don't have the same muscle behind them. So there are conversations going on about how to maximize benefit by building factories locally, for instance, and training workers inside huge markets like Nigeria and South Africa. also by protecting local platforms which are boosting local creativity and industries especially. This is the case in Nigeria. So let's take a closer look at how the country is responding and what the caveats are for the local industry when a giant like Temu lands. Iro Mosele Ogedegbe is an expert in e-commerce based in Lagos.
Temu has a lot of things that it's doing right. I think in terms of leading the e-commerce market, it's doing things very differently. And one of the things it has at its back is a strong marketing strategy. It's very aggressive. They have an endless marketing budget. According to statistics, in their first year, they spent $1.3 billion on marketing. And a huge percent of this was in social media advertisements. So in the growing world with growing internet penetration, the consumers they target get to see their ads on Facebook, on Instagram, on TikTok, on Pinterest, on YouTube. And not only is their marketing strong, they also have strong influencer programs. I could order from Temu, I share a video on it, and then I get reached out for my video to be sponsored. And that makes people want to promote the brand. So, and their deals have been found to be very fantastic. The gamified experience on Temu, and it has also reflected in data showing that customers now spend more time on Temu than on any other online marketplace. And it's because of that gamified experience where you are able to have an adventure as you shop.
Remind us what gamified means.
Gamified means that it's almost like you are playing a game. Just like when you visit some game centers where you throw a ball into a basket to get discounts, to get coupons, to unlock points. You get to spin wheels. You are timed on a shopping coupon or a shopping discount. So you are running all through the app trying to get the best deal and trying to check out before your allowed time to use the coupon expires. So that makes people spend more time trying to just shop like a billionaire, like they said.
It involves you and it sort of...
It draws you in.
Right.
It draws you in a lot.
So Nigeria has other online shopping platforms. Two of the biggest ones are Jumia and Konga. How are they performing against Temu at the moment?
I think Temu entering into the Nigerian market is an injection of fresh energy into the e-commerce space. Because we know last year in quarter one of 2023, Jumia for some time has been recording losses in its business. So Temu coming into the Nigerian market kind of revalidates the model for e-commerce business in Nigeria and sets a tone for how you can do it to attract the market. But in terms of how it affects them, we know that competition is always good for the customer. So when businesses compete on price, they get to get the best deals. But I want to introduce what I call parallel competition. While on Temu, we have unbranded products being sold. We have many, say, lesser quality as per the product itself. We can turn over to Jumia when we want to make purchases that really matter to us. So Jumia has stronger partnerships with brands in the country and outside the country. So it means that if I want to make an important purchase, I'll be going to Jumia and not Temu. They don't entirely compete on exactly the same set of products. So it's good for the market and it's an injection of fresh energy.
Temu has got so much backing in terms of money and firepower. And it seems to be learning as well about its market and, you know, looking at what its
sure.
market wants. Does it threaten small Nigerian businesses that may be trading on Jumia and Konga?
It threatens them in the sense of suppliers, producers on the Jumia platform that produce indigenously will be at risk of losing customers to Temu in the short term. And also for these businesses that are named on Jumia, it presents an opportunity for them to also think of it in the way of changing their suppliers. So some of the producers, manufacturers, sellers on Jumia still order from China. So in this case, those suppliers have a choice not to take Temu as competition, but probably better as a new supply stream for their import and export business. It presents them an opportunity to move their supplier stream or increase their supplier strength by taking advantage of better deals on Temu.
Are there policies in place to safeguard local businesses from a giant like Temu? Do you think there should be a policy in place?
I think there should be a policy in place. However, it's difficult to regulate internet businesses with no fiscal offices in the country and no legal obligations to the country. But we've also experienced cases where the federal government of Nigeria has stepped in to curb what looked like a dangerous situation in the case of Twitter, in the case of some restrictions on Binance and so on. So there should be laws to safeguard local businesses in the case of a direct threat to local businesses in Nigeria.
I mean, are you saying that there is a law, that there are plans for such a law?
Yes, there are laws, but they don't directly affect the businesses until they have breached certain rules. In the case where there are data privacy breaches or where harmful products are being sold, that can allow the federal government to step in and regulate.
And that was Iremon Sele Ogedegbe, an expert in e-commerce from Nigeria. This is Focus on Africa from the BBC World Service.
Richtig spannend, richtig vielfältig. Das ist deine Karriere bei Kaufland. Ob Trainee-Programm, Direkteinstieg, Studentenjob oder Praktikum. Finde bei uns den Einstieg, der zu dir passt. Profitiere von einer attraktiven Vergütung, spannenden Aufgaben und individuellen Entwicklungsmöglichkeiten. Werde jetzt Teil unseres Teams. Bewirb dich jetzt unter kaufland.de/studenten. Kaufland, hier bin ich richtig.
We often report on the many different scams operating to lure young people on the continent from their home countries to sketchy and downright dangerous situations in other parts of the world. This is the story of one of those people. Her name is Faith Pamela Ayoko Omolo. She has just made it back home to Kenya from Malaysia, where she spent years on death row for drug trafficking. She's one of many, many people trapped in jails in the Far East and in South America. Faith thought she was going to be employed in a legitimate job. When she landed in Malaysia, she was arrested for trafficking methamphetamine, also known as crystal meth, ice, poor man's cocaine. This is a drug with many, many names. She said she was innocent, that she'd been tricked by someone she trusted. But this is an old story, and Faith had to face the consequences. She'd been arrested in 2016 and sentenced to death in 2021. For 3 years, she was on death row while appealing her conviction and sentence. She was reprieved from death row but sentenced for possession of drugs, for which she was given 12 years. After 8 long years in jail, Faith was freed this past December. Her lawyer said she was an innocent carrier, a victim of a criminal cartel, much like so many other men and women in jails in places like Hong Kong, Thailand, and Malaysia. Faith is back in Kenya now, reunited with her 3 children and her husband with the help of the Hong Kong-based NGO Voice for Prisoners. Let's hear the story from where it started, with her arrival in Kuala Lumpur, the capital of Malaysia.
When I reached in Malaysia airport, the bag was checked in machine, but it was having different sound, so they separated it with some other bags. After these people, they took that bag, the officer, the customs office in Malaysia, they have to remove everything which was inside.
When did you find out what the drugs were that they had in there? Did the customs officials tell you that? And did they arrest you immediately?
Yes, they arrested me immediately. Then they showed me the drugs was being put in one small plastic, which is so thin, but it was like salt. So when they show me, they are telling me ice. So I'm touching even the bag. I'm crying for them. What kind of ice is this? They are telling me it's not that ice which you are thinking. This one is not called ice. This is drug. So when they told me, I was so much shocked. I told them, please, can I call my friend which sent me here with this bag?
So basically, you ended up in court. How did they treat you? You were charged. You were standing in court. How did they treat you?
When I was arrested, it was 2016. So I stayed in remand for 5 years when I was fighting for my case. I lose my case. The judge verdict was death sentence. So the judge condemned me to die in prison.
You mean you got the death sentence and you went on to death row waiting to be, I don't know how they do it in Malaysia, to be hanged?
Yes, waiting to be hanged. But Malaysia, they have procedure. Before they hang you, they have another procedure. They still have 3 judges. So I was still having chance for 3 judges or 5 judges.
So you could appeal?
Yes, I appealed my case and took Mr. Simon Morali, one lawyer in Malaysia by the name Mr. Simon Morali.
So before that, did you think that you were going to die by hanging in Malaysia, or did you have hope still that you will come out?
Sometime I was thinking that I was going to be hung in Malaysia because I have even friend which they hung in Malaysia.
What was it like in that place?
It's so terrible. They chain my hand, they chain my leg, and that chain surround your stomach and is so heavy. Until today, I still have chain pain on my legs and my hand. I can't even carry a jug of water because of that chain. So it was so terrible.
How long were you on death row?
3 years, 4 months.
3 years, 4 months?
Yes.
So what happened to get you off death row?
So Mr. Simon Morali, he tried his best to help me because he was seeing my case that I'm innocent. Always he's telling me that you are innocent, but I'm not a judge. But how I'm seeing your case, if he's a good judge, will help you and leave you to go. It's by God's grace. I can't say it's by God's grace.
God's grace and a good lawyer.
God's grace and a good lawyer, because I didn't know that I can come out. It's like a dream for me. I came out on December 6, 2024. I came back December 6.
You've been out for just over a month.
Yes.
So this is really new for you still, huh?
It's new for me, but I think you understand me. I'm still having that pain. It's so painful for me. Very pain. It's very, very pain. Okay. Yes, pain which I feel. I feel a lot of pain, a lot of pain.
What are you remembering now that is making you sad?
I was so happy that I'm going to work in abroad, but yet I was going to prison. I went in prison for something which I never do and I never know, and they condemned me to die in prison. They doesn't believe me. I've not yet recovered.
Tell me this. The people, your friends, so-called friends, that tricked you into this situation, have you spoken to them?
This my friend which tricked me in this situation, the last when I spoke to her is that day when I was arrested. From that day when I was arrested, she went and closed everything, her Facebook, her WhatsApp, even my family could not find her.
When you heard that your death sentence had been quashed, you know, that you were not going to die in Malaysia on death row, Tell us about that day. Were you in court when you heard it?
My lawyer said, he tell the judges that I'm innocent carrier because this woman which used me is not only me. When the Father John was writing this letter, he said that have some women which he used, which are in Hong Kong prison. So I'm not only the victim which he used. So Mr. Morali was trying to get those points to convince with it judge. Mr. Morali was fighting my case by innocent carrier.
Right.
That
and
is
also,
why I came down.
And also you could point to the fact that the same person that had sent you to Malaysia with drugs had also sent other girls or other women
in
or
Hong
other
Kong,
people
in Hong Kong prison.
In Hong Kong prison, right. So when you heard that you were coming out, can you remember how you felt?
I shouted, I screamed in the court because it was like a dream for me. The first judge which insisted, which was asking my lawyer, why my lawyer calling me innocent? That is the first judge that day, God touched his heart. And he's the one who spoke for the first time. He said, Faith, you are going to come out of death row. Then the judge said, Faith, you will go back to your country on November 25.
So you are not in jail now, right?
I'm not in jail. I'm in Kenya already.
Right. So you're a free woman.
I'm free woman now. I'm in Kenya. Even now, I'm in my house. I'm talking to you in my house. I celebrate Christmas with my family after 8 years Christmas in prison.
What was the first thing you did as a free person?
Before the plane land, I hear the sound of someone saying that, welcome to Jomo Kenyatta Airport. I screamed in the flight. Everyone was shocked in that flight and started to cry in the flight when I'm shaking and crying so much.
How did your children and your family react and your husband?
When my children see me, they know me. But me, I forget my children. My last born, when I went to prison, I left my last born when I was 3 years and he was in hospital. He was operated. He's so tall, very tall. So he's crying and hugging me. So I'm asking my last born, who are you crying like this? He's telling me, Mommy, you don't know me. I'm Bravon. His name is Bravon. So that makes me to cry so much because I stay outside for a long time, even I forget to see my children. It was pain to me. It was pain to me, but I'm happy God has brought me back to my children.
So how did you come back? Was it the Kenyan embassy or was it an NGO or who helped you to come back to Kenya?
NGO from Hong Kong is the one who paid for me ticket to come back in Kenya.
That's the story of Faith Pamela Ayoko Omolo in Kenya. Focus on Africa came together as the result of the work of many hands and heads, Nyasha Michelle, Yvette Twagira Maria, and Stefania Okereke here in London, and Frenny Joey in Nairobi. Patricia Whitehorn was the senior producer, technical producer. Gabriel O'Regan was at the mixing desk. Andre Lombard and Alice Mudengi are our editors. I'm Audrey Brown. Thank you for listening.
Yoga is more than just exercise. It's the spiritual practice that millions swear by. And in 2017, Miranda, a university tutor from London, joins a yoga school that promises profound transformation.
It felt a really safe and welcoming space. After the yoga classes, I felt amazing.
But soon, that calm, welcoming atmosphere leads to something far darker, a journey that leads to allegations of grooming, trafficking, and exploitation across international borders.
I don't have my passport, I don't have my phone, I don't have my bank cards, I have nothing.
The passport being taken, the being in a house and not feeling like they can leave.
World of Secrets is where untold stories are unveiled and hidden realities are exposed. In this new series, we're confronting the dark side of the wellness industry, where the hope of a spiritual breakthrough gives way to disturbing accusations.
You just get sucked in so gradually, and it's done so skillfully that you don't realise.
And it's like this, the secret that's there. I wanted to believe that, you know, that whatever they were doing, even if it seemed gross to me, was for some spiritual reason that I couldn't yet understand.
Revealing the hidden secrets of a global yoga network.
I feel that I have no other choice. The only thing I can do is to speak about this and to put my reputation and everything else on the line. I want truth and justice.
and for other people to not be hurt, for things to be different in the future.
To bring it into the light and almost alchemize some of that evil stuff that went on and take back the power.
World of Secrets, Season 6, The Bad Guru. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.